Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Shop Talk Show this week. We have two excellent sponsors. One is Harvest at getharvest.com. Time tracking for professionals. It's super nice. We'll show you, tell you a little bit about that later in the show. And Environments for Humans that have two CMS related online summits coming up here pretty soon. One is the WordPress Summit at WPSummit.com and the Engine Summit, an expression engine summit at enginesummit.com. Use coupon code Shop Talk for 20% off either of those online summits. We'll tell you a little bit more later in the show, but for now, let's kick things off. I learned this on the banjo.
Welcome to episode 72, can you believe it, of the Shop Talk Show,
really?
Fart sound podcast about web design and development. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Goyer.
Hi, everybody, and with us is Raquel Velez. Did I say the last name right?
Yeah, you did. Thank you so much for having me on here. I'm like totally like jamming in this like little office to like the little music in the beginning. I'm like, yeah! I love it.
In your office at Storify, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Which is like a, it's like a, tell stories through tweets and stuff, right? Or can you?
Yeah, exactly. Basically giving, curating the social web. A lot of journalists use it, but a lot of non-journalists use it too, just to like write stories and talk about things that are interesting using, you know, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, whatever. It's really awesome.
Yeah, is that, and are you in North Carolina still, or did you move from there?
No, I moved to San Francisco.
Oh, right on. I was like, that's a big, I was like, I don't know where that is, but I'm pretty sure it's not in North Carolina.
No. North Carolina is awesome for its, you know, certain things, and then San Francisco is awesome for many other things.
Different things.
Yeah, totally different. Very different. Oh, my God.
So, Rockbot, that's your kind of online moniker. Your website is rckbt.me.
Yes.
What is Rockbot?
Rockbot, so I have been a practicing roboticist for about 10 years. And
best word ever.
No big deal.
No big deal. And when I was a kid, nobody could pronounce my name properly. They kept calling me like Raquel or Rachel or Rochelle. And it drove me absolutely insane. Yeah. So
I didn't Google it or anything right before the show.
Yeah, it's all good. So my nickname for a long time was Rocky. And so then in 2009, I wanted to get on this little like Twitter thing. And I was like, okay, I have to come up with like something really cool as a username. And so I was like, Rocky, Robot, Rockbot. Hey, that sounds good. And yeah, so now some people like just come up to me and they're like, Rockbot. I'm like, hi. That's my new
excellent
name.
Excellent.
That's all I got for that.
Dude, on
that's
point awesome today, Evan. So roboticist for a long time. Was that, did that happen at Caltech or did that happen later or what's?
Yeah. Well, so I started playing with robots in high school. Quick story. I was going to be a filmmaker. I wanted to be the next Steven Spielberg, win an Oscar, you know, whatever. And then I went to this event sponsored by the Society of Women Engineers, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm good at math and science, great, whatever. And then this one engineer is like, yeah, so I built like a robot, and like, she puts this huge robot on the table, and I was just like, oh my God! And that was it. It was like a switch just clicked for me, and I was like, that, I'm gonna do that. So I've been doing a lot of, I've been playing with a lot of different types of robots ever since then. Off and on, there are moments where I've just kind of started and stopped and started and stopped. And then I went into web and here I am now, but now I'm like, I can't leave the robots behind. They keep following me everywhere. And so now with like Node, we've got Node bots and it's just like, they just keep showing up on my doorstep and I'm like, fine, I'll take care of you, God.
Play with your robots. So this isn't, you're not, this is, NodeBots is just one recent chapter.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't even know it. Maybe give us the thing. Like, no, I mean, first of all, we're going to end up talking about Node a whole bunch today. So if anybody's just like, ugh, Node, then just probably listen to another podcast. But also, like, so we a lot of us understand Node on a very brief level. Like, it's like a thing, and it's really easy to write a server in it, and it's good at, like, I don't know, asynchronous web connections or something, like a pretty trivial understanding of it. So why is that good for robots?
Okay, to be 100% totally honest, Node is not necessarily good for robots. It's more like, there are a lot of people who... So the great thing about Node is that it's just JavaScript, right? It's just a platform written in JavaScript, so you can do JavaScript on the front end, you can do it on the back end, and it's beautiful, and you can have all this wonderful asynchronous stuff, like you said. With robots, it's just the excuse of letting more people play with robots. I mean, you don't need to cross over into C++ or Python land if you don't want to. Now, anybody who knows JavaScript can program a robot, and Rick Waldron, guy behind Johnny Five, both of us agree that maybe JavaScript isn't necessarily the right language for robots, but who cares? You get to build robots.
I'm sorry, did you say Johnny Five, like from Short Circuit?
Yes, that's the name of the Node module that Rick Waldron built, or wrote rather, that basically allows you to write JavaScript, and it looks a lot like jQuery. So like you've like servo.move 50, and then you basically have this servo that moves 50 degrees, and it allows you basically to write this program in Node, and then it shoves it over onto an Arduino, and the Arduino has like different pins, and that like basically gets to start and stop your, you know, different bits of hardware. So like if I say, you know, servo.move 50, then the little connection goes along to the Arduino, and the Arduino says, okay, well, this servo's on pin number 10, you know, flash 10, go 50 degrees, and then your servo moves 50 degrees, and it's beautiful.
Well, so some people like are interested in this just because they want to see the robot move, and that using a some kind of API that's already been written is good enough for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
It's cool. It's just like, I'm looking at like some sample code right now, and it's like var 5 equals require Johnny 5, right?
So yep.
And then he has a variable called board, and that's the board you're talking about, the Arduino board.
Yep.
And then it's like board on ready, claw dot move X number of degrees, whatever you're feeding into the function or whatever. And yeah, like claw is new 5 servo pin number 9. And so like it's just it's cool. Like, yeah, I don't know. I think every like geek's fantasy is to like play with robots and whatever, automate your breakfast, like in what was it, Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, it's hilarious. Like at JSConf last week, we had our first official NodeBots event, and it was like a day long just hacking on hardware. And there were a bunch of people who were like, I don't even know, like, what if I like hurt myself or whatever. And by the end of the day, everybody had something to like demonstrate. We had sumo bots kind of attacking each other. It was hilarious. And it was awesome. And it was all these people who were like, I never knew I could do hardware. And now they can. So just because of this little thing called JavaScript, you know, whatever.
Nice. Yeah. You were just at JSConf. That's what, yeah. Right? Was that a good time?
Yeah, oh my god, it was amazing.
That's cool.
Oh my god. I want to go back.
I heard good things, like you drank a whole town out of alcohol. I've heard some pretty amazing legends.
I didn't do that, but...
So before you got into web, you worked at like NASA, JPL, is that right?
Yeah,
you
did. That's correct.
So you're clearly the most intelligent person we've ever had on this show.
Oh my god.
Our podcast about fart sounds.
Oh man, no. I worked at NASA JPL. I worked on a robot that basically follows you around like a lost puppy dog, which on the surface sounds really lame. But if you think about it, the military implications: you could basically have this huge car-like robot that holds a huge payload of say, I don't know, 7,000 tons, and you could basically have a convoy of these huge vehicle robots that would just kind of take things around. So that's
like the DARPA dog?
Not really. Think of it more like a really sophisticated beer cart, right? Okay. So just like you strap the beer onto the cart, and then you tell the cart, follow that person. And then the person can walk around and not have to actually carry the beer or, you know, anything. It would just be the beer follows the person, and the person can go around to everybody and say, here is your beer. And, you know, you'd have the beer.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's good to hear NASA's investigating look, beer Sherpas.
Yeah. There you go. It's a Sherpa. That's the perfect way of putting it. That's it.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah, so we have lots of Node-ish stuff to talk about. We could continue talking about that forever, but we might as well get into the Q&A where that happens, right? Unless you have any news or drama or anything, Dave.
I think we're light on the drama, very thankfully. The only big thing, I guess, is flat design in iOS 7, which will hit next week.
Which is still rumored. I tried to look and see if there was any, like, actual source that said, hey, the new design of this thing is going to be flat. And there's like a little bit of hinting at like personal styles of the people involved and stuff. But there's no announcement from Apple that says iOS 7 is going to be flat, is there?
Yeah, well, the what's his name? Tim Cook at that D3, is that what it is? The all things, yeah, all considered.
Where he was getting interviewed by...
Yeah, that was a little bit. He's kind of hinted. But anyway, that's whatever. That's not what this podcast is about.
No, not really. It is quite the trend, though. I should say that. I guess this is we're recording this on Wednesday. I'm not sure when it'll get to your ears. But the Code Pen Rodeo has one more week left, which is just kind of little like fun ideas for you to build something with little mini prizes. And I think it's kind of a fun thing that we're doing on Code Pen. So go to blog.codepen.io if you're like interested in like, I want to build something today and I need a reason or excuse to do it. So,
well, that you're the current one is like, rethinking the shopping cart. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not even necessarily rethinking it, but like doing a good job on a shopping cart so it doesn't suck like most of them do, kind of. With a couple, yeah. And there's and people took it as reinventing, or at least some people did, and there's some crazy ones in there.
I think it's really cool. I was impressed. I was just like, oh, geez, these are good ideas.
Totally.
It's like a pattern library, kind of.
Indeed. And that's, you know, I mean, that's the idea is that the more we have of these, the more like useful little pet, you know, like if you'll think of this next time you need a shopping cart, at least quickly to check out for inspiration.
Oh, one more link. The chat room sharing Pattern Lab from Brad Frost, patternlab.bradfrostweb.com, kind of getting into that idea of modules as deliverables and all that.
Yeah, which you've written about before as well, yeah.
Which I've written about. And basically, Brad has a GitHub repo now that you can download and fork and change. But it's kind of just like all the components for your website in one big browsable thing. And so you can browse per component. You can browse, like, you can start building pages using components, like using all your little components, just like you would. But
right, it's more of a philosophy of how it fits together, not like use this as the actual, I don't know.
This is not what you deliver, like this is not what you'd upload as the live website. And it's kind of wrapped in his ish plugin as well. So it's kind of like this resizable iframe context for browsing elements, which is really helpful in responsive web design. So
there's almost no style applied to these things at all. I mean, it kind of, you know, it kind of has a bit of a Brad Frost style to it and it's just like,
And I think the whole deal is like, you just start customizing these yourself. If you need different HTML, you do that. If you need different, you know,
I like the presentation here, how it's, you click the little small, medium, large, okay, check that out. PatternLab.BradFrostWeb.com. Cool. Let's get into the questions. We have one here from Patrick. Ooh, sorry, I've hung out with Patrick before. Marciel? Sorry, dude.
Sounds good.
Works at Happy Cog Philly, though. What's up? hi. Raquel, I was wondering if you could talk about what is the ideal scenario to use Node.js over another development stack like Rails or Django. Are there things that Node handles exceptionally better than the other guys? Are there things that Node doesn't handle as well? So what's this is like the standard question. We have like a couple of these in different variations, and is a common question about Node. Like, what's up? When do you use it and why?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really common question. So Node is really, really good for things like multi-user, really fast type stuff. It's good for APIs. It's good for basically any time that you're going to have a lot of people coming into your site, doing something really quickly, and then, you know, maybe disappearing or hanging out for a little while. I like to think of Rails as being really good for something that's a little bit more static. If you have things that you don't need a lot of interaction, like the perfect example of a Node app is like a chat room or instant messaging or multi-user games. So like if you have like a four-person shooter or something like that, you could totally use Node for that because everything's super fast, super real-time. It's like Node is all about real-time. And so like if you just have like a site, like a complex site that's got like a shopping cart and you just have people kind of looking around and browsing but not necessarily interacting with other users, I would say that's probably a little bit more appropriate for a different language. Node can obviously handle that, no problem. But if any time that you're going to have a lot of users coming in together and interacting with each other, Node is really, really fantastic for that.
Mm-hmm. Simurai in the chat room, in our chat room, is like, this chat room is on Node.
Yeah.
So if you're in the chat room right now, you just answered your question.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And someone else said APIs. Like, APIs are perfect, absolutely perfect for it. We use it at, like, at Storify, we use Node for our API, and we use Node for everything. But yeah.
So speed is a concern. So like if you had some kind of web server set up to do very similar things, and one of them was running Ruby on Rails, and the other one is running Node, and then you just slammed them both with traffic, Node is going to win all day long. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, but they're not necessarily mutually exclusive, right? If you're going to write a little CMS or something, it probably makes more sense with the tools that you get in Rails than it does on Node, or is that not correct?
That's absolutely correct. Node is, in the Node community, we like to say that Node is good for everything, but great for a few things. So, I mean, I'm not going to knock down Node. I'm not going to say that Node sucks for anything, but like if you're just going to have a blog, just go with WordPress. Like, like you don't need to kill it with Node. Like a Node is overkill for just like a blog or just a little website. But for something that has a lot of interactivity, Node is really good.
And maybe just the real time component of a web app that otherwise isn't. Yeah. I mean, you don't need to think of them as mutually exclusive. Or whatever. So I think as an example, I don't think I've ever handwritten any Node ever, but I work with other guys on CodePen that does, and CodePen is a Rails app, but there's a lot of stuff on Node. For example, the preprocessor request. So if you're in CodePen and you're typing and you're using a preprocessor and then you stop typing, we will process that request real quick in the background and get a response, your SAS or whatever. And we use a server running Node to do that. And there might be 100 people doing that at once, you know, hitting that server. So there's just lots of requests happening all really quickly, and Node, you know, doesn't break a sweat usually.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly. And a lot of people, I mean, having a full 100% Node stack is extremely rare. Most people have like, they'll have a PHP stack or a Rails stack or something. And then they'll use Node for something like a piece of the app, like a widget or something like that. So,
sure.
Yeah.
I think the chat room is probably the best example here. Just if you're using, we have like 96 or 100 people in the chat room right now. And if you're doing it on Rails, you just basically have to say like, okay, server, I'm going to set up a JavaScript timeout to like get all the new messages, and I'm going to append them in order. And so you'd have 100 people hitting the server querying the database every 100 seconds or whatever, and like you're just gonna flop your Rails server probably
long poll or whatever, but yeah, nothing's really clean.
Yeah, but with Node, because it's invented, it's like, oh, if there's a new message or a new post, then I'll just auto push that out to the browser because I have a socket is what it's called, but I have a connection to the web browser, so I'm just gonna send it when it
and needs even it. This chat room that we're in right now, like the framework around it, like the routing and the URLs and stuff, might not be Rails or might not be Node.
Yeah,
it but could but just like the actual there. Chatty part itself probably is Node.
Yep.
Okay, so Patrick, don't think of them as mutually exclusive. In fact, as we've discussed, a full Node, you know, Node doing everything is pretty rare. Use them for kind of the real-time component or something that really needs to be really fast. Cool. I have some questions about Node, though, too, just in my low understanding of it still, really.
Go for
and
it.
Then it's, and then it's people, they, it, it, it's all, it's never even, they just say, it's JavaScript. You can write JavaScript on the front end, you can write JavaScript on the back end, but, like, is it actually JavaScript that, like, that gets confusing to me? And I'll just finish my thought a little bit and then you can take it for as long as you want it. But it's just that, like, JavaScript, when I think of it, is, it's, does a lot of stuff with the DOM. It manipulates the DOM and it deals with DOM events and all that type of stuff. Something that a server-side language, that's irrelevant. It doesn't even make sense. And that server-side languages can do things like, I don't know, read a file or query a database and stuff. And those are completely different concerns. And it just seems, but the language, like the APIs and stuff in the language itself would be different than like, how do they even look the same? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So, first of all, it is all JavaScript. It's 100% JavaScript. If you read JavaScript, the good parts, like that's going to help you write better Node JavaScript. And it's going to help you write better web, like, you know, client side JavaScript, right? Like at the end of the day, the language itself is all the same. But you're absolutely right that the way that you write it kind of is different. So on the back end, you end up having a lot more in terms of like closures and functions. JavaScript isn't classical necessarily, but we kind of play with it in like an object-oriented type of way. And it's all about using certain types of modules and things like that to kind of help you with all the stuff that, you know, you were saying, Chris, that doesn't really make sense on like the Node front end type side, right? Like, or sorry, the JavaScript front end side. So like in Node, we have a file, there's like an FS module that basically allows you to talk to the file server. Like, you know, you can talk to files and read, write, all that stuff. We have routing mechanisms to allow us to route things from you know, the front end to the back end, all of that stuff, models, controllers, views, all of that stuff. It's all JavaScript, but the way of thinking is not just, all right, how do we manipulate the DOM? Because the DOM is completely irrelevant, like you said. But we are thinking about, okay, well, so if I have this object that I'm going to refer to as like my data coming from my database, like how do I manipulate that? And how do I push that off? And so really, instead of thinking about it in terms of DOM stuff, we think about it more in terms of JSON objects, right? So if you want to just think of that, like, so we pass around a lot of JSON all over the place and then manipulate things and kind of use that as our, well, what are we doing? What do we do with this JSON object? Does that make sense?
Okay. Sure. So everything's an object or and whatnot, and you refer to properties on that object as, you know, the name of the object dot and whatever the property is, and that property could be a value or it could be another object or not, maybe not that, but I don't know. It behaves the same and the syntax of the language is the same.
Right.
But it's not intercompatible anyway. So anybody that thinks that they could just take some Node code and like run it in the console of a browser, that
actually
doesn't do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what is but there is no .fs automatically in the, like, it'll be like fs is not defined, you know. It'll...
Right, absolutely. But like if, for example, let's say you use underscore, right, and you've included underscore on your front end, but then you can also require underscore as an NPM module on the back end. And NPM, for those who don't know, is the Node Package Manager that basically allows, it's kind of like gems for Ruby. So Node, we have NPM, or we've got modules. And basically, like, there's an underscore module, and you can include that in your backend. And then, like, if you just assume that you've got you've got underscore on the client side and the server side, you could totally just copy and paste from your server code and then, like, put it in your, like, Chrome development console, and it'll still work. It'll work exactly the same.
Cool.
Yeah.
When how is underscore related to that? It's just...
Just as an example of like a module that you might use, like a third party API that, like, at the end of the day, your underscore syntax is going to be exactly the same front end, back end, et cetera.
Cool. Because underscore gives you stuff like, I don't know, things that you can do to arrays and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I use underscore all the time.
Right on.
That's cool. In theory, and you probably wouldn't ever want to do this, you could write a Node app in jQuery if you wanted to, or
if you really, really wanted to. There's
lose a lot of convenience because there's no DOM.
Right. Although there are some packages or modules that try to use the DOM, like they try to put the DOM into the server, and you can do stuff there. But I personally try to keep server side on the server and client side on the client. It's a little scary when you try to mix the two up. It gets confusing.
Let's say you're
a traditionalist.
Yeah, I know. I'm so conservative. That's me. Yeah. Living in San Francisco.
Let's say you got real good at JavaScript programming. You're a JavaScript programmer and you've never done any server-side stuff in your life. Would you feel more comfortable? Is it an easier jump to do server-side stuff then? Because it is the same language, or is it still just a weird, wild world?
No, absolutely. It's totally comfortable. Like, there's a ton of... I'll actually be at jQueryConf next week, and I'll be talking about front-end development in Node. So, like, if you're a front-end dev and you're used to doing JavaScript, like, you can totally just jump over. I mean, it's beautiful because a lot of people who are kind of scared of the back end, suddenly, like, here's this magic pass to the back end. Like, come on in, come hang out on our side, and you can kind of play around with it. But actually, I'm a front end dev in Node, so I do a lot of stylus, Jade, and stuff like that. But I also work on the server. I don't talk to the databases as much. That's what the back end guys do. But
cool. I just, this is, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I think thought it was relevant quick. Rod Smith wrote in with just a little, he said, you know, cause we've referred to this a few times on Shop Talk Show. You should have like a level up weekend where you like learn something that you didn't know. And Rod Smith did that on his own one of these weekends, and his was to learn Node.js. And he chose to build a little project, which he called, the Data URI Amazing Conversion Site, or DUACS. DUACS at HerokuApp.com, where he deployed it. And it was something that we talked about on the show where you could, somebody wrote in to ask us, you know, why would you convert an image into a data URI? And then, okay, we cover that. And then if you're doing that, should you optimize the image before you turn it into a data URI? Or can you optimize them once they're already data URIs? And that's weird. And this does both. It will take your JPEG or PNG, and it will optimize it first, and then give you a data URI. So that's what this little thing does. And he wrote it in Node, so pretty cool.
Sweet.
Talk about, like, the full package there. That's it. It's compression and URIization.
Yep.
That's not a word. All right.
Let me do a little sponsor quick. Great. of Harvest is one of our sponsors. Get Harvest. .com. It's time tracking and invoicing, right? So you set up your Harvest account, and it's a really nice web app. So you can use it that way, and you go and like start a timer when you're working on this job and say what job it is, and then and everybody on your team can do it. And then you kind of have a sense of what you need to bill that client because, you know, that's how much you worked on it. So you should bill them and invoice right through it. So it's got all of that in there, and everybody I've ever known who uses it says that they really like it. Now, a web app is great. But they also have apps for your iPhone and your iPad, and there's a Mac app too. And I think that's particularly useful that you can just, you know, start a little timer right on your Mac in order to track time rather than doing it I don't know, always through a web app and having to have that tab open and all that stuff. It's nice that you can do it both ways. It's nice to have options. Very cool. And I always like the little feature where if you like get up and walk away and forget to stop tracking, that it will stop the timer automatically for you. And then when you come back, it'll be like, hey, were you working on that client stuff or not?
Totally. It's such a cool product. I use it, you know, if I ever had like a, whatever, like a side project or something, pick up work in, but even still, it helps me like track my time. Like I'm able, and I can, it'll auto save a log of that time I'm putting into something. It could even be like something like Shop Talk. I could be billing Chris for hours or something, but, it's cool. Because it can help you figure out how long it takes you to build things, and you can give better estimates to your boss or whatever. So yeah. Think about that.
And there's a million reasons to track your time, certainly. Good work, Harvest. You're the industry leader, I'd say, in time tracking and doing it well.
Absolutely.
Well, sweet. Let's jump in. We have another question from Clayton Miller.
Yeah, let's do that one because it's so similar.
It's so similar, but, you know, it's
it references some other tech that we haven't talked about.
Yeah, so here we go.
Hey, guys, this is Clayton from Houston, Texas. I have a question for you and Raquel. What would be a real-world application on a small scale that you would build for Node, Ember, or Backbone? I haven't found a good answer of when to use one of those over something like PHP or another language like Python or Ruby. I'm very novice in JavaScript and jQuery, but I'm interested in what type of application one of those I mentioned would be appropriate for a project to build from scratch and to learn something new. Thanks.
So his question is kind of like he's bundling like Node and Ember and Backbone, kind of three kind of JavaScript buzzwords. But what would be a real world application for like those technologies over existing things that we're all familiar with, like PHP or Python or Ruby?
Yeah. So I actually had this exact same situation about a year and a half ago. When I was first getting into Node, I was like, all right, I need to learn this JavaScript thing. What do I do? How do I get into it? And also Node. And so I prefer to learn by doing instead of just doing tutorials. Plus, by the way, anybody who's learning Node, if you go on Google and you're like, you know, Node tutorial, whatever, anything that's older than like at this point a year is completely useless. So, you know, just don't even bother. So try to find tutorials that are more recent than that. So actually I went ahead and built a little app that's called Crowd Notes, and it's on my GitHub, and I blogged about it as I was writing it. And it was just this app that I came up with. And the idea was if you're at a conference and you want to write notes about the talk that you're seeing, what if everybody wrote notes about the talk that they were seeing? Wouldn't it be great if you could just kind of collaborate on notes for this speaker, and everybody can contribute to the notes, and then at the end of the day, you can see this, nice column of all of the notes. And I mean, obviously, version 17 would have similar notes kind of compressed together, and then just kind of collating it by timestamp, so that at the end of the day, anybody who wasn't at the talk could see what people talked about, because not everybody's going to talk or note the same thing, so you can kind of get a better overview of what the talk was about. And then also as a speaker, you can look back and you can say, oh, these were the points that people actually got. So that's like a perfect Node example, right? You've got a bunch of people writing these notes about the same topic at the same time, but you want to timestamp them, you want to collate them into one sort of idea. So if you want to take a look at an example app, like feel free to go reach out on to GitHub, just rockbot/crowdnotes. The other super, super common example is a chat room, an IRC client, different things like that. Some people have tried doing a blog. To me, that's more of a classic Ruby example or a Rails example. But you can certainly do it in Node. If you're just trying to get involved and get started, I would just say pick a project that you know that you need. Backbone, a really good, the classic example for that is like a to-do app. I don't know.
It needs to be less real time, right?
Yeah, it's just
you,
but
probably.
What if you have multiple people? Like, let's say you have a family of four, and everybody's contributing to the To-Do app, right? So now everybody has it on their phone. But let's say I'm gonna go with the really boring, like two parents and two children. Let's say parent one says, like, puts on the To-Do app, like, somebody go, you know, mop up the floor in the kitchen. And let's say, you know, child number two does it. Well, you don't want child number one and parent number two to go in and have to do it again, right? So if you would have one person checking off the, like, okay, I already mopped the floor, then everybody else gets notified that the floor has been mopped. And now you have, that's like a really nice real time. So if you want to do that, that's kind of a little bit complex, but super awesome.
Yeah. And good for Node in this case.
Absolutely. Perfect for Node.
So, okay. So we, yeah. Okay, great. I'm trying to like think of Node and Ember and Backbone and see, is there anything that's like super, and this may be muddy waters still. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, because the thing about Backbone, so I haven't played with Ember, so full disclosure, I can't really talk about Ember. But between Backbone and Node, you could kind of argue that they do the same thing, but in different environments. So, I mean, Node, it doesn't have to be MVC, you can do, or MVStar. It can be all sorts of different things, but Backbone's kind of the little MVStar on the client. So, I don't know. There are instances where you would use both at the same time, but
that's, I guess that would have been my next question. Does that even make sense?
I'm sure absolutely. So like for us, here at Storify, we actually have, so everything is Node, front end Node, back end Node. But we have an admin dashboard that, you know, we, the folks behind the scenes can use to look up, clients and customers and users rather, and like, you know, reset their password for them if they forgot their password and they can't figure out how to do it. Sure. And our admin dashboard is written in Backbone, just because we don't need to be calling a whole bunch of different things all the time. Like just, it's kind of nice and snazzy. You can, you know, close things, open things, and it's different than using jQuery, I guess.
But I always see like Node again, the backend architecture as like high concurrency. Is that the right word? Just lots of requests coming in. And
then
Backbone would be for that real-time app-like feel where I click this submit button and then it does, you know, your normal AJAX request. And then if it's successful, it will like change the whole page, like with a little loading bar or whatever. They always have loading bars, but yeah, it gives you that app feel where, yeah, I don't, they're a little bit exclusive, like you said, but, you could do that. You could, you can do it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you can do anything. Whether you should is a completely different question.
Yeah. It could just be like your app is so fast on Node because it's getting requests at such high input output that it doesn't even need Backbone. You know, you don't even need that, like that kind of real timey feel. But then again, you know, if your boss wants to pay you to do that, you should do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's our the rule
I'm
of
sure
thumb
this
here
will be a topic that will continue to come up on Shop Talk Show for many, much times to come until they're replaced by even new, fancier things. I should do Environments for Humans is our longtime sponsor. You guys are familiar with this. The first week we're advertising their CMS summits, which are cool. So you know that when it's Environments for Humans does a summit, it means it's online, which means you can attend it from anywhere, including, you know, just pants free in your house if you want. Or at work, you can buy the group pass and have everybody sit on a couch and whatever and save the cost of sending everybody on a plane to go do it. They're very economical. They're very interactive. It's pretty cool because there's, you know, you watch it with a chat room. I think they still use an Adobe thing just because it works pretty well. But, you know, this is just begging to be rewritten in Node. Using what, that'll be the future, I bet. I bet a year from now, we'll see Environments for Humans will be using like some kind of new thing for these that's based on WebRTC and with a Node backend. Just saying.
Yeah,
Totally. Anyway, the one coming up June 11th is the WP Summit. So go to WPSummit.com. It's a WordPress summit, an all-day thing, you know, content strategy using WordPress as a CMS, a little bit about jQuery and how that works with WordPress, utilizing custom fields, custom post types, the WordPress APIs, all kinds of stuff about WordPress. Check that one out coming up June 11th, which is soon. Use coupon code SHOPTALK for 20% off. And then if you're into Expression Engine, June 12th, the next day, is an Expression Engine conference about designing and client work and dealing with errors and stuff and just kind of talking about the kind of the future of Expression Engine. So if that's what you're into, June 12th is that one. Again, Shop Talk for 20% off. These conferences are awesome, so check them out. Thanks to Environments for Humans. Let's do another question. We have one from Luis Rodriguez. A question for Raquel. Where do you get the inspiration for tackling robot slash complex projects with Node.js? Where do you get the inspiration for that? Do you always start with a clearly defined problem, or do you just kind of poke around with the code and think of cool things to do while coding?
Let's see. Normally what I do is I don't work well if I don't have a purpose. So I always, normally it's like, something has happened and I can't do it the way I want to do it. So I say, ha, I will fix this. and depending on how much time I have, because that's a really important factor, I will set about to fix it by saying, okay, well, how do I fix it? And I'm the type of person who will write everything down, every single idea. Like, I spend probably 40% of my time planning and thinking and trying to figure out how I want everything to go. And then I will start coding. There are some people who can just start coding and kind of think in code as they go along, and I'm not that person. I'm very much I plan it, and then I kind of get a really good idea of the structure, and then I start going. And that actually, for me, means that I end up debugging a whole lot less, which is nice. Of course, I still have to debug. There will always be bugs. But it feels a little bit less spaghetti-like. But as for inspiration, I think the inspiration really just comes from what's awesome. What will make me wake up in the morning and say, oh my God, I can't wait to do this. Like, right in that little period right between waking up and like actually getting out of bed, that's when I have like some of my most amazing and ridiculous ideas. And if I'm not careful, I'll just pounce on one of them and say, haha, this is what I'm going to do. And if I'm really crazy, I'll just do it. Yeah.
What's like a current or latest robot project you've had that you're just like, I have to do this. I'm doing this.
Oh yeah. So at JSConf, I presented a module that I had written for Node, that basically piggybacks off of Johnny Five. It's called Vector with a K. And basically it's just a linear algebra module it's a robotics focused linear algebra module for Node. The module itself is kind of boring. It's just a lot of matrices and vectors and transformations and things like that. But what I presented was a robot that I basically made it be a little bit smarter using math. And so it's this little arm robot that it doesn't do much. It's just a little arm robot, two joints. So if you think about like your shoulder and your elbow, and you've got these two links that basically, so you've got the bone that goes from your shoulder joint to your elbow joint, and then you've got the other bone that goes from your elbow joint to your hand. And so you just have like this little robot that can kind of move around. I'll send you a link to my talk whenever they put it up. But basically now I have this idea of attaching a camera to the end of this arm and giving it more degrees of freedom. So instead of just being planar, two-dimensional, making it three-dimensional, and then having like this camera follow somebody around, like just kind of staring at them like a paparazzo, right? Like just, oh, hi, there you are, you know, like, and just following you around the room. Because I think that, yes, it's a little creepy, but it's also ridiculously awesome. So I want to do that. And that's going to be something that I'm going to work on over the next few months to see.
Nice.
Yeah. So I know it's like, doable.
It's like just, Jarvis from Iron Man.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
That's awesome.
Silly yeah. Jarvis. Screwing up.
Jarvis is my favorite robot. He's so cute. He has so much personality.
Yeah, or an arm.
That's awesome.
Or is Jarvis like the just the voice, the world?
Oh, maybe he's
maybe
the voice.
He's the
whatever. We all know what we're talking about. We're talking about the robot, but the personality that like
yeah,
you know, tries guy. To put out the fire before
a little before emo.
Yeah.
So can I tell you my big thing about robots? I really like the idea of robots and emotion. Like I want to code a Hubot for its node, but it's like you put it in your campfire chat room or something like that. I think it would be funny to have a slightly racist robot and hear me out.
What? Okay.
Like you just say like whatever robot hate neck beards. And then every once in a while, this robot will show its personality, like tell an off colored joke about neck beards or something like that. It's maybe violating like the laws of robotics, but
no.
I just think it'd be really funny. Like, just like, this neckbeard moved in down the street or something, and you're just like, dude, stop it. That's not okay.
Yeah,
you're a robot.
So actually, I mean, if you can stomach reading academic papers, and I know not everybody can, I personally have to like be super awake in order to read an academic paper, but if you can, there are some really amazing papers coming out of MIT in their media lab. They have robots with personality that do maybe not exactly that, but something similar. So if you just kind of use them as inspiration, be like, aha, I could totally play with this and try to, like, the ones at MIT, like, they have facial expressions and stuff that will totally, you know, freak you out. But it's really awesome. It's really, really awesome.
Neat.
I like the idea of debugging robots, right? Because when there's something wrong with a robot, it, like, trips or... you know, like there's some like super physical wrong thing that happens.
Oh yeah.
It's not like, just like, ugh, I'm throwing errors and I can't end the logs and I can't figure out why. That's like, you know, that's the worst, you know, but
yeah.
if your robot trips.
No, absolutely. Trip. Like we had, so if anytime you try to build a robot, like you're going to have a ton of bugs. And, there was this one robot that I had that I put him on the table and he was supposed to follow a line. You know, fairly well. It's a little bit more complex than you think at first, but in the grand scheme of like autonomous vehicles, it's a fairly simple robot. And like the line curved around the table, and the robot just kept going, and then fell off the table, mm-hmm. and you're like, no. so that's always fun. And then there was another robot that I once had that had a memory leak, and you didn't know it until the robot just stopped moving. And then you're just like, why?
I guess all your like bugs and stuff, they end up being a lot more catastrophic and expensive, I would assume.
Sometimes, right? Sometimes if you are not careful, you can certainly ruin a bit of hardware. But which is why I always recommend to people who are just getting started to get like one of those kits from like SparkFun or Adafruit or something like that. Because the parts in there are relatively cheap, but they do everything that you want them to. So practicing on the cheaper stuff before you go out and start buying the expensive stuff is a good way to learn and figure out like, how do I tell my robot to stop moving, like to stop pushing the servo beyond its ability to move, things like that. So yeah, you do have to be more careful. It's not just let's just hit refresh and see if it works this time. Oops.
<Yeah. laughs> So work your way up to node copter with laser beams.
Yeah. Like basically
hold off on the laser beam at first.
Yeah. Start with the LEDs and then move your way up to servos. And then
to two LEDs.
Yeah. It's a great way to get started. If you ever come to a NodeBots event, we will make sure that you can turn an LED on and off as the very first thing. And then we move on from there.
Well, cool. So we got one more question here. We got a few more, but
I just kind of packed them in here at the end. So
more node here, but Chris Van Houten writes in and says, I recently started working for a company as a front-end developer using Node. Personally, I love development work, and my first programming language was PHP with Less and jQuery. What other libraries and languages would you recommend to help me move forward in my career that aren't just trendy, but are expected to be around for a while?
Let's see. Node is going to be around for a while. I have no doubt about that. That's awesome. Node is going to be around for a while. I think it's a very specific tool. So it really depends on what company and things like that. But there's no harm in learning Node. If for no other reason than, especially if you're in the front end, getting better at JavaScript is always a good thing. JavaScript is going to be around forever. I have no doubt about that. HTML, CSS, etc. I don't know. I keep hearing about things about Golang. That one just kind of sounds like a fancy, people are getting into it now because it's cool. I believe my friends when they say that they love it, and I believe them when they say that it's really fast and really amazing. But I haven't had a chance to take a look at it, and I don't know anybody who's really, I don't know any companies that are based around that. Mm-hmm. And in terms of, I don't know. In terms of what other languages to keep track of, PHP makes me want to cry. I love Python though. Python is amazing. So I would put I bet on Python, and I bet on Ruby and Rails just because it's so prevalent. I mean, if you want to do .NET for the rest of your life, there will always be companies that use .NET. I don't know if those companies are the ones that you want to work at though.
That's all good stuff. I feel like Chris is well suited to. I don't know if you really need much more, Chris. I mean, you have, it's working with Node now, which is non-trivial, right? And Node is nobody's ever their first language, probably. And has experience with PHP, so you know what, you know, the past was like or whatever.
Yeah.
You've written Less, which means that you know CSS too, kind of. Mm-hmm. You write in jQuery, so you're familiar with front-end JavaScript stuff. That's a lot. I mean, you could just do a deeper dive into the stuff that you already know for a long time and be well off.
I also want to point out that once you know, so the crux of every programming language is logic, right? And so it doesn't matter what language you choose now, just as long as you choose something and get good at it. Because at the end of the day, if I had to go out and pick up PHP or Ruby, like I don't actually program, I don't know any Rails or Ruby or anything. But if someone told me like tomorrow, okay, Storify is changing everything to Ruby, like let's go, you have a week. Like I have no doubt of confidence at all that I'm gonna be able to pick it up in a week, because like at the end of the day, it's just syntax. It's just syntax. So if you've got the logic and you've got the experience of knowing that, okay, what does a memory leak look like? What does it look like in this language? Or what does a structure look like? How do I want to pass information? How do I pass data between structures and modules and things like that? Those are the questions. Those are the smart questions that you're going to be asking, not how do I write a for loop? Like a for loop is going to be a for loop is going to be a for loop. Like it's going to look a little bit different in every language, but it at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. That's stuff that you can pick up in like literally 30 seconds because you look up in the docs. But the hard stuff is the logic. And if you can master that now, then no matter what, you know, happens to the bubble or whatever, you're still going to be employed because you understand the logic. You understand why things are happening the way that they are.
Yeah, that's an amazing answer. And true. And it's similar to the answer of like, there's so many other ways that you can level up your career and how valuable you are and all that stuff. Just, you know, practice everything, practice being a better person, practice being a better communicator. But, you know, there's so many things you could do, including just learn more about logic in general. and build stuff, build websites all the time.
Yes, never stop building. If you don't have a GitHub account, get one and just start posting stuff. People love it when you have open source anything. Mm-hmm. And it, one of the things that people are also often like scared about with open source is they look online and they're like, oh my God, these projects are huge. How will I ever get I don't even know where to start. Well, start on your own project. Like my very first project on GitHub was something I wrote myself. And then I wrote about it. I blogged about it and said, hey, this is what I'm doing. And people found that invaluable. So am I an open source contributor? Absolutely. Because I opened my source up. So just show your stuff, throw it around, see what happens. Do awesome stuff.
Yay! Yeah.
Be awesome.
And you're not going to lose ground by like getting really good at Node. I mean,
no. Just,
yeah. It's not a shame, you know? Like, yeah. Everything builds off each other going forward, you know? Like, Java guys switched to Ruby, and now Node is borrowing the gem spec kind of for their package manager kind of thing. And so everything kind of builds on each other. So. Boom. Next question. Do we got time for one more? Rachel. Raquel, do you have to go? Or are you...
I'm totally good for another 15 minutes. Let's go. Let's do it.
Okay. Let's do one more question. I'm going to skip to the end. This one's kind of interesting. And I want, you know, school just got out, right? So college kids are out on doing crazy things, living on their parents' money. Aaron McGrain writes in, hey, brand new listener here and a college student. I was just wondering, what should I do to practice my web coding and design over the summer? This is, I just want to get your opinion, Raquel. What do you think they should do over the summer?
So there are a lot of different options. The easiest one is, like I said, just start working on something. Come up with an app, whatever it is, it doesn't even matter, and just start coding. That's a very minimum, an opportunity for you to practice, and you'll bump into bugs and you'll be like, I don't even understand what's going on. And then you can go onto, you know, Google and just put in your error messages and figure out what's going on, and you'll learn that way. And then if you like this is it, if you're just sitting at home doing nothing, right? Like, write your own app, figure out what's going on in it. If you have questions, if you use IRC, go into IRC. I know that's like super like, hello, you know, 1994 is calling. It wants its fax machine back, whatever. Like, I didn't even start using IRC until 2010, but it is invaluable to me. The Node.js room is amazing. If you're doing Node, et cetera, like people are love to help. If you have an opportunity, like, try to get into the local web dev, web shops, you know, do like an internship program or whatever. If they don't have an internship program, I kid you not, I've done this before. I have said, hi, I would like to be your intern. And they'll be like, we don't have any interns. And you're like, yes, I understand that, but I want to be your intern. And here is why. And then you tell them what you want to do and why you want to do it. And then they'll say, but we don't have any money. And you say, you know what, whatever, it doesn't even matter. Just make sure I have a desk. Like, please let me be your intern. I found that a lot of companies, as long as you just go up to them and say, look, this is what I want, this is what I need, and this is how I'm going to help you, and it won't even cost you very much, they'll bring you on. That's totally fine. Not a big deal. So if you can get yourself into a web shop and try to learn from people who are already doing stuff, that's another excellent way. Let's see. Read code. That's how I level up every once in a while. Or actually, by every once in a while, I mean every single day. Read other people's code, try to figure out why their code works. Sit there with a pen and paper if you need to and just diagram it out. Read books. But at the end, one thing I try to do is if somebody who's never, ever done any web development at all, ever, I'll tell them, find a web page that you like. And then because of the beauty of the web, just open up the source and try to find out how that website works. What you can do is without even opening up the source, just start building the web page. Use HTML and CSS to make your page look exactly like their page. And then try to use JavaScript to make it act the same way. And then if you want to go even deeper, put a backend onto it. I mean, I prefer Node because it's so easy to set up a server, et cetera. And then just try to basically try to copy another app. Just do it. And
nice.
Yeah. Like there's nothing wrong with that.
It works for design too, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then you have a cheat sheet, right? Because you can just look at their source and find out how they did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I think the idea of copying an open source app without looking at it.
Yeah.
And then you can go look at it.
Yeah. And then if you have questions, you know, post an issue on GitHub and be like, why did you do it this way? This seems ridiculous. And then they'll tell you.
That would be a fun question to ask, you know, because it's not, this doesn't work. Mm-hmm.
Right. It's like,
why did you use this philosophical thing? You know, the chances of that being like answered because it's something fun to answer would be high.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was very comprehensive. I think this would be a good CSS tricks article too, Chris. Just like,
oh yeah, what to
stuff
do this
you
summer?
Can do this summer. Here's some videos or something. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. Good question, Aaron. Thank you so much. Well, Raquel, this is where we wrap up the show. But once again, if people want to follow you, be your best friend on GitHub and send you money, how do they do that?
Rockbot on Twitter, same on GitHub. My website will be up on the show notes, I'm sure. Anytime you want to, you know, chat, like just reach out to me. I try really, really hard to respond to everybody who tries to reach out. If you have questions, I would love to talk to you, answer them. I'll be at a bunch of different conferences. I promise I'm not as intimidating as my resume says I am. like, just come up and talk to me. I will not tell you to go away because you're dumb. That doesn't happen ever. I believe there are no dumb questions. So
I think you should raise the bar a bit, and like people have to have a minimum understanding of like zero G environments.
I actually know a woman who put a math question on her OkCupid profile to make sure that like.
Well, that's the best idea ever.
you must be this smart to hang out with me.
That doesn't work for guys.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. No, but for me, just, you know, come up to me, talk to me, ask me questions. Let me ask you questions. It's obvious. I have no problem talking.
Well, great. Well, thanks so much for taking time out of your day. And thanks to Storify for giving us your time. And thank everyone for listening. Chat room, you guys always keep us honest and factual. We really appreciate that. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show and buy stuff at the store. Hey, why not? That sounds good. And Chris, you got anything else for us?
ShopTalkShow.com.